She knew she had to get to work or she'd dissolve in tears. Maria and I will be out there shortly. We'll be organizing the volunteers from the boathouse. If you find anything at all, buzz my pager. Chapter 56. Morning Newsflash, 7 a.m. Special Bulletin. Mystery continues to surround the unexplained disappearance of Romeo Capel, daughter of TV news anchor Cornell Capel, and Julio Montague, transfer student from Corpus Christi, Texas. Are Romeo and Julio lovers like the famous couple of old? Have they run away together? Were they desperate enough to consider suicide, as Shakespeare's characters did? Or are their lives in danger as they hide from the threat of gang violence? Details in a moment. The daughter of TV6 newscaster Cornell Capel, Romeo Capel, age 16, and her friend from school, Julio Montague, also 16, are still missing. They are believed to be lost, perhaps injured, in London Woods Forest. Searches by park police and city police, which were hampered by last night's stormy weather, have been unsuccessful. The two young people were last seen yesterday at dusk, walking near London Woods. Five teenagers, all reportedly members of a local gang known sometimes as the Devil Dogs and sometimes simply as the Family, have been arrested, charged with possession of firearms, and are being questioned in the disappearance of the teens. Anyone who has seen Romeo and Julio or knows anything about their whereabouts is asked to contact News 6 or the District Police Department. Police are asking for volunteers to help in a detailed, systematic search of the woods. If you are available and would like to help, please call the station at 555-3458 or call the Park Police at 555-9898. Volunteers should report to the boathouse for maps and instructions. We thank you for your help. Stay tuned to News 6 for further details. Chapter 57. Television Interviews. This is Nanette Norris reporting live from London Woods on the case of the two missing children. We're going to ask some of the people out here in the field exactly what is going on in the search efforts. Nanette, wearing a pink designer suit and matching shoes, tiptoed daintily in the muddy grass. She carried her portable microphone and motioned to Lawrence, the cameraman behind her, to hurry. He sighed, shifted the weight of the camera on his shoulder, and followed her to another volunteer.
"Excuse me, sir. This is Nanette Norris, and you're live on TV News 6. How long have you been out here, sir?"
She held the mic very close to his mouth. When his voice boomed out, Lawrence had to adjust the sound level.
"I've been here since they called for help about 2 hours ago. Ain't no sign of them kids. They just gone."
"Any indication of foul play?"
Nanette asked as she switched the mic back to herself quickly. The volunteer looked at her, squinted his eyes, and responded,
"This ain't no baseball game, lady. This here is life and death. Quit asking stupid, useless questions and help us look. You getting in my way."
Nanette signaled to Lawrence with a roll of her eyes that this interview was concluded. Lawrence grinned at the volunteer and gave him a thumbs up. Nanette moved to her next attempt, a woman busy answering one of the phones that had been hastily installed that morning by phone company volunteers.
"Excuse me, ma'am. This is Nanette Norris, and you're live on TV News 6. Tell me, ma'am, what's the latest in the search efforts?"
With a phone on one ear, the woman responded,
"Well, they're dragging the lake. It's really hard on the parents. They're out there looking with us. The two fathers, Mr. Capel and Mr. Montague, are working side by side, checking every tree and every bush to find their kids. I understand there was quite a bit of friction between the two at first."
Nanette's eyes brightened.
"Friction? What kind of friction?" She was hoping for a news scoop, an angle that no one else had covered yet. The woman shrugged.
You know, each one accusing the other of being responsible for this situation. But that's behind them now.
Nanette looked disappointed. And the mothers of the two young people, how are they taking this? The woman was getting annoyed.
They're doing what any mothers would do. They're searching with the rest of us, and praying, and believing. Believing that their kids will be returned safely. But the longer we look, the scarier it gets.
Have you noticed any arguments between the mothers? Any racial insults or name-calling?
Nanette was insistent.
Are you nuts? What kind of a question is that?
I just wanted to generate some interest in our viewing public, replied Nanette with insulted pride.
There's plenty of interest already. People from all races and neighborhoods are working together to find these kids. Why don't you talk about that? Hey, the phones are ringing. I got work to do here.
Nanette smirked as she returned to the microphone.
Well, I can see you're busy.
I'll let you get back to your work.
The woman ignored her. Lawrence grinned again. Nanette walked down to the edge of the lake, making sure she stayed on the cemented walkway, not the muddy edges where most of the people worked. She approached a man carrying a plastic garbage bag full of twigs and branches.
Excuse me, sir. This is Nanette Norris, and you're live on TV News 6. Can you tell us how the lake dragging efforts are going?
It's a slow process, he answered. We found lots of unbelievable trash, but fortunately no bodies. But it's a big lake. This will take all day.
What if you don't find anything? Nanette insisted.
Well, that's good and bad.
How so?
It's good because we can be fairly sure they didn't drown, but it's bad because we are running out of other options.
Are you sure they're here?
All indications are that they were here as late as last night before the storm. That's all we know.
The man, tired of her insistent questions, tried to walk away. She continued,
If you find them dead, it'll be pretty gruesome, right?
He looked as if he wanted to yell at her, but he remembered the camera and simply said,
Excuse me. I've got to get back to work.
He marched up to the boathouse for more garbage bags. Nanette followed him. The room was full of bustle and action. Phones rang, people checked maps, and new volunteers arrived every few minutes, asking for assignments and leaving to search a new area. Nanette approached the table where a woman was setting out donuts that had been donated by a bakery.
Excuse me, ma'am. This is Nanette Norris, and you're live on TV News 6. May I ask you a few questions?
Sure, if you don't get in my way. I've got to make some more coffee here for the volunteers.
Goody! Make mine with 2 creams and 2 sugars.
Aren't you on the air?
The woman asked wryly. Lawrence rolled his eyes.
Oh, right! Nanette reminded herself.
Tell me, what do you think about the names of the 2 missing kids? Is the closeness of their names to Romeo and Juliet, and this recent disappearance, just a little similar to the old Shakespearean story?
Yeah, it's ironic, but that don't mean nothing.
The woman poured the ground coffee into the machine and added fresh water.
Do you think that Romeo and Julio tried to commit suicide like the lovers in the tale?
Why should they do that?
The volunteer asked in surprise.
From what we can tell, they were in love with each other. We're way past the days of arranged marriages, sister. They're in trouble. They need our help. And if you would get out of the way, we might be able to do that.
Nanette hurried away as she saw some policemen enter the room. The woman gave Lawrence 3 donuts in a small plastic bag.
Combat pay,
she whispered to him, pointing to Nanette.
He laughed, thanked her, and agreed with her completely.
Nanette motioned to Lawrence to hurry as she spoke to the police officers.
Excuse me, sir. This is Nanette Norris, and you're live on TV News 6. Officer, can you tell us anything about the reported gang connection to this case?
I can't say much. What we know is that there had been some trouble at school between Romeo and Julio and some other students who had been identified as having ties with a local gang. Nothing has been verified, however, and anything else would only be speculation.
Do you think the lives of Romeo and Julio were threatened or in danger? Some people say they were both involved in gangs.
Nanette motioned for Lawrence to do a close-up on her face.
Aren't reporters supposed to go on more than some people say?
As I said, ma'am, anything else would be speculation. Excuse me.
The officer walked away.
Nanette told Lawrence to cut the close-up, cut the shot completely.
Lawrence the Silent smiled once more. A flurry of activity erupted when Ben and Destiny showed up. Nanette rushed over to the crowd and pushed her way through.
"It's Romeo and Julio!"
she screamed into the camera. "They've been found!"
Lawrence turned off the camera and said, "Nanette, they've been showing pictures of those kids all day. That's not them."
"Oh," she said, sniffing. "I knew that. Let's go interview them anyway. I'm sure they know something."
She squeezed through the crowd and spoke to Destiny first.
"What is your relationship with the two missing teenagers, dear?"
Destiny replied,
"I'm Romy's best friend, and please don't call me dear."
Nanette rolled her eyes and asked,
"Are you here to join the search?"
"No. Me and Ben have been searching all night. We found Romy's shoe."
"How do you know it's her shoe?
It's pretty muddy,"
Nanette said doubtfully.
"'Cause it's my shoe. I loaned it to her last week,"
Destiny told her impatiently.
"And you, son, what's your name and what do you think of this tragedy?"
"My name is Ben, and right now it's not a tragedy."
Ben turned away from the camera.
"Did you ever read Romeo and Juliet at school?"
insisted Nanette.
"Yes, I have," Ben replied, smiling innocently. "Several times. Have you?"
Nanette looked for others to interview, but everyone seemed to be busy working to find Romy and Julio. Nanette then tried to get interviews with Romy's and Julio's parents, but all of them refused. Tired and angry at the mud on her pink designer shoes, Nanette decided she had had enough for now.
"This is Nanette Norris, reporting live for News 6 from London Woods, where the search continues for Romeo Capel and Julio Montague. Live updates as the news unfolds."
Chapter 58. The Fathers, Noon. Luis and Cornell trudged slowly through the thick weeds and underbrush near the water's edge. They knew that if their children had been in that lake and had somehow been able to get out, they would be somewhere on that muddy shore. The day was bright and cool, but the sun warmed them, and they had removed their jackets. They worked slowly, methodically, checking every rock and tree, grimly determined to find their children.
"Luis, you okay?"
Cornell asked as Luis wiped his brow.
"Hand me the flashlight. We haven't checked this area."
"Si, Cornell. I'm fine. My lungs are strong, but my heart is becoming heavy. It's almost noon. We should have found them by now."
"Where are Maria and Lady?"
Cornell asked, although he knew the answer as well as Luis did. Even idle conversation made thoughts of what they might find more bearable.
"They were searching on the other side of the lake, together, just as we are," Luis responded.
"You're right."
Cornell hesitated.
"Luis, I'm sorry about accusing Julio of whatever it was I said. I wasn't thinking straight.
I just am so afraid. I've never been this helpless and without hope."
There is always hope, Cornell. The children will be found, alive and well. That is my hope and my prayer.
You're very wise, Luis. Let's sit here on this log a minute. You got any more of that water?
See, help yourself.
So, what's it like to work with a woman such as Miss Norris? When I went back to the Central Volunteer Area, I heard her asking the most outrageous questions of the volunteers. How is she allowed to get away with such?
She is the niece of the executive producer of the show, and even he is running short of patience with her. She's really hard to work with, and she just doesn't think before she speaks. And in a reporter, that's a dangerous quality. So it's rough sometimes. Really rough. One day we were out together doing a story, and she walked up to the mother of a murdered child and asked her where she'd bought her dress. The woman was ready to strangle her.
Luis chuckled.
I think I might have helped her to do it.
So, do you like Ohio? Cornell asked him. Have you made friends?
It has been difficult. I have my job, and I have acquaintances, but no real friends. I really miss Texas.
Cornell offered his hand to Luis. Both hands were covered with mud and dirt from their long morning search. Cornell said clearly,
I would be proud if you'd consider me your friend, Luis.
Thank you, Cornell. That means so much to me.
I hope that our children will also continue to be friends.
Unless...
I can't bear to think of anything else, Cornell interrupted. I'll never give up hope, but it doesn't look good. Two young people reaching out to each other against all odds, against pressure from their peers. He added sadly,
Luis, did you oppose Julio seeing Romeo?
At first, I didn't think it was a good idea. It is always easier to stay with what is safe and known.
I know. I also felt threatened by your son and my daughter. When we first found out about all this last night, my assumption was that he was some kind of internet freak who preyed on defenseless girls.
Luis chuckled.
Oh, no. My Julio has never preyed on anyone. He just likes computers and, apparently, your daughter as well.
They sat down together on a large log. The lake, glistening against the clear sky, showed no sign of the storm of the night before. Each father was lost in his own thoughts about his child. Luis remembered Julio as a 10-year-old, steering his uncle's sailboat, wearing an old sailor's cap, and grinning into the sunlight as he pretended the boat was his own. He remembered the swim meets and the band concerts, and the proud glint in his son's eye as he mastered new skills. To end all that pride and potential in a place so far from the home he loved. Guilt and anguish made Luis sigh and bury his head in his hands. Cornell remembered Romy's 5th birthday, when she rode her new bike proudly with no training wheels. He smiled, remembering the look of victory on her face that day. He thought of her part in the school play when she was 9. Of her face as she sang in the choir at church, of how she would look next year when she graduated from high school. He stopped himself then, afraid to think of the future. He glanced around the woods. Somewhere in this soft green space, or that dark blue space in the distance, his daughter waited for her dad to find her. He pulled a branch from the log they were sitting on and broke it in frustration. He reached down to snap another branch when a speck of blue caught the corner of his eye.
Luis, what is that under that log behind us?
He asked, not wanting to show any excitement in his voice.
What? I see nothing. Where is the flashlight? Look. Lodged under those rocks and sticks. It's a shirt. A blue jean shirt.
Oh, Dios mío! I see it! Julio was wearing a shirt like that. But this one is torn and muddy and... Pull it out! There's a hand! Oh, Luis, I think we found them!
Cornell's heartbeat was like thunder from the night before. Luis couldn't stop shaking. He could hardly grab Julio's shirt.
Dios mío! It is my Julio! And Romiette! Together under this fallen tree by the spillway. We've been walking back and forth over this area for hours. Oh, God, she's so cold.
They're not dead. They are very cold and they're unconscious. But I can feel a pulse in both of them. Hurry, send up the flare. Get the medical team over here. We found them. Cornell shouted to the sky in exultation. Chapter 59. News Update. Lawrence was tired of following Nanette with the camera. Not because the camera was heavy, that was his job, but because she never knew what questions to ask, and she never knew when it was time to stop talking. None of the cameramen liked being assigned to Nanette. They'd have a lottery each day, and the loser had to work with her. Today was Lawrence's day, and he hadn't even lost the lottery. He had volunteered because of his respect for Cornell Capel. He'd had a little break earlier while Nanette left to go change her clothes. While she was gone, he'd helped answer phones and unload equipment from the various volunteers. She had returned, however, in an outfit that looked like something someone would wear on a safari. Tall leather boots, khaki slacks and shirt with a matching hat. Still not very good for walking in the mud, but at least her pink shoes would have a chance to dry out. He sighed when he saw her return in her red Mercedes.
"You've been sitting around for an hour doing nothing," she accused him cheerfully.
"Let's get back to work, Lawrence. I'm ready now." He said nothing, but shouldered his equipment and glanced back at the other volunteers, who said with their eyes that they understood. Nanette found a man serving sodas to the searchers, so she headed over to speak to him first. She didn't even ask what had happened during the search in her absence. She smoothed her hair, checked her makeup, and smiled for the camera.
"This is Nanette Norris, reporting live for Channel 6 from London Woods Lake. We are still searching fruitlessly for the bodies of Romiette Capel and Julio Montague. Hundreds of volunteers have come to assist in the search effort." She pointed the mic in the face of the soda volunteer.
"Can you tell me, sir, what kinds of sodas you are serving to the volunteers here? Wait, there's a commotion at the edge of the woods. I think, it looks like, they found Romiette and Julio."
She left the volunteer in mid-sentence and ran quickly to where a crowd was gathering around Cornell Capel and Luis Montague. Each carried a large, heavy burden. Nanette continued with excitement.
"I can see the two fathers. Each is carrying a child. Cornell Capel is carrying what appears to be the body of his daughter Romiette, and Luis Montague is carrying the body of his son Julio. It is indeed a sad day here today. Romiette Capel and Julio Montague have been found dead here in London Woods. Let's have a moment of silence on this solemn occasion."
She waited exactly 2 seconds, then declared brightly,
"I'm going to try to get closer to see if we can determine the cause of death."
She tried to push her way through the crowd, but dozens of noisy, seemingly exultant people blocked her way. Lawrence looked at the two fathers. They weren't just smiling, they were beaming with joy. He whispered to Nanette,
"Psst, Mrs. Norris, they're alive."
She glanced at him in astonishment, looked to where the fathers were approaching, and said glibly,
"Wait, one of the children seems to be moving.
Hey, they're not dead.
Oops, sorry, looks like I spoke too soon. But they look dead at first, honest."
Ladies and gentlemen, we are pleased to announce that Romeo and Julio have been found, and apparently, at least one of them is alive. She lowered her mic an inch, then yelled, "Hey, Lawrence, are they both alive or is one of them dead?" "Oh, am I still on the air?" "Oops again." Lawrence said nothing, but kept the camera rolling as Nanette blundered on. "Sorry, folks," she blurted. "Let me get this straight for you. It looks like both Romeo Capel, daughter of our own TV6 anchor Cornell Capel, and Julio Montague, son of Luis and Maria Montague, have been found alive. Their conditions are unknown at this time, but they look pretty bad, all wet and muddy." Lawrence shook his head in disbelief. Nanette worked her way through the crowd until she could get a closer look. With proper respect for the situation, Lawrence turned the camera away from Romeo and Julio and toward the face of the cheering volunteers. Nanette, totally unaware, kept on talking. "The young people are, however, seemingly unconscious and considered critical until we get to the hospital and find out more. They are being loaded into waiting ambulances as crowds of cheering volunteers hug and congratulate each other." The two ambulances fired up their sirens and wailed off in the distance. "Ladies and gentlemen, we have much to celebrate. We will report to you live from Good Samaritan Hospital as soon as we have more news. Stay tuned to News 6. She turned to Lawrence. "Wow, that was great. Let's get down to the hospital quick. I want to be the first to interview the parents. Cornell is a great personal friend, you know." Lawrence, as usual, said nothing. As he loaded up his gear, he whispered a silent prayer of thanks for the safe return of Julio and Romeo. Chapter 60. At the Hospital, 8 p.m. Julio awakened and smelled roses. Lots of roses. For a moment, he couldn't remember anything. Only that when he tried to move, every muscle ached, and his head throbbed like thunder. He sat up slowly and painfully in his hospital bed and looked around in disbelief. Dozens of bouquets of flowers, many of them roses, filled every available space. He couldn't understand why so many flowers would be here. And then he remembered. Romeo, the storm, the water, the cold, the fear. His head dropped back to the pillow, and he let Romy consume his thoughts. He prayed she was safe. He had so many questions. His mother peeked in the door and ran to him, her arms outstretched in one of those loving hugs only a mother can give. She wept, with joy this time, as she buried her face in his hair. Julio wept also, murmuring to her, "Mama, lo siento, mama. I'm so sorry. I did not mean to make you worry." "Shh, mi Julio, mi hijo. You have nothing to apologize for. You are a hero. You have saved her, just as she saved you." "Romeo? Is she alive? I couldn't get her to breathe. Oh, Mama, I couldn't bear if something had happened to her. I told you she was special, Mama." "See," she said, smoothing his hair as soon as she ruffled it. "I remember." Julio frowned, trying to force the memories. "I don't remember much after the boat exploded and we lost each other in the water." His mother shuddered. "I don't know if I can bear to hear such terrible things. All I know is that the doctors say that it seems that the warmth of your bodies kept both of you alive through the cold and damp of the night. Alone, you both might have died. But together, you lived." Julio was afraid to believe her. "Are you sure she's okay?"
Yes, my son, she is fine. She is cold and wet and stiff, but she did not drown. Thanks to you.
I want to see her, Julio said decisively. He tried to sit up quickly, but his pounding head made him slow his movements.
See, very soon, Julio, his mother assured him.
But first, your father wants to see you. When the doctor told us you were awake, he asked the woman a million questions. He is very proud of you, Julio, she whispered as Luis walked into the room.
Hola, Papa, Julio said quietly. I am sorry I caused you so much worry.
Luis took one look at his pale and haggard son, propped on pillows and surrounded by flowers, and for the first time since the ordeal began, Luis Montague allowed himself to break down. Finally, he hugged his son and, sniffing to regain his dignity, said,
You were very foolish, Julio.
I know, Papa, Julio admitted. I'm sorry all this happened, but I'm not sorry about caring for Romy. I would go through it all again to make sure she was safe.
Luis sighed.
I too should apologize. I was wrong to forbid you to see her. Her parents and your mother and I spent many hours together. I have learned much.
Julio grinned.
I will do my best to obey you, Papa. I still have much to learn, too.
One nurse came in to take Julio's temperature, and another brought him some soup. He thought he had never tasted anything more delicious in his life. He relaxed and told his parents all he could remember about the evening. Every few minutes, he'd ask if he could see Romy. Finally, Maria laughed and told him she'd make it happen. She left the room smiling. Romy's room was just down the hall. She too awakened to a room full of flowers sent by well-wishers from all over the city. Her mother sat in a rocking chair next to the bed. Her father had been standing at the foot of her bed, watching her sleep with love and amazement on his face. Romy turned her head and smiled at her mother.
Am I in trouble, Mom?
She asked, her voice a raspy croak. Lady Brianna jumped from her chair and sat on the edge of her daughter's bed.
Not anymore, Romy, she murmured softly. How do you feel?
Thirsty, whispered Romy.
That's ironic, her father said with a half laugh. After all that water, the first thing you ask for is something to drink.
He poured a small paper cup of water and fed it to her gently.
Is my princess going to be okay? He asked her.
I think so, Daddy. I'm sore all over, and my throat hurts. But I feel okay.
She looked around the room.
Who sent all these flowers?
Do you know that hundreds of people have been searching the park for you? Her mother asked.
Really?
Romy asked in genuine surprise. And hundreds more saw the reports on the news and sent good wishes and prayed for you and Julio. They're just glad you're alive and well.
Is Julio okay, Mom? It was like my dream. I was so scared, Mom.
Her mother soothed her. He's fine, honey. Can you tell me about it? Romy shuddered.
The water, the storm, the lightning. I just knew I was going to die. But Julio was holding my hand. I was fine as long as I had his hand in mine. But the storm and the lightning and the fire separated us. The boat exploded. I went under the water. Oh, Mom, it was so cold. And I couldn't breathe. And then I went under again. And then it was like my dream.
Julio was calling my name, and I was floating. And then it was dark and cold, and that's all I remember. The last thing I remember was Julio's hand in mine. Where is he, Mom? I've got to see him. He wouldn't let me die. Are you sure he's okay?
His father told me he's going to be just fine, Cornell assured her. He's tired and sore, as you are, and he's been asking to see you, too. The doctors are going to bring him in here as soon as he's been checked out. Are you sure you feel all right?
Bring him in here? I look awful.
Romy threw her hands up to her hair, which was matted and uncombed. Her mother laughed, a strong laugh of release and joy. You nearly died last night, and you're worried about your hair? That shows how well you really are. She laughed so hard she had to sit down. You look beautiful to me, she said finally. And to Julio, too, I expect. Her laugh stopped suddenly as she noticed Romy's worn face on the pillow.
You're shivering, Romy, she said with concern. I'm cold, Mom. Can I have another blanket?
Her mother swiftly covered her, and her dad brought another blanket.
Thanks, Romy whispered from beneath the covers.
Sure, baby. You've been through so much.
We thought we had lost you,
her father admitted huskily.
I don't remember getting out of the water, Romy mused. Julio saved me, didn't he?
Apparently so.
Romy smiled.
I knew he would. He loves me.
Yes, Romy, that too is very clear.
Mom, you know how you feel about Daddy? How you smile and cheer up when he gets home from work?
Lady B grinned at her husband as he winked at her.
Yes, dear, I know, she told Romy. Do you think about him all the time, even though you're married and stuff?
Her parents smiled again.
All the time, her mother said. And you know how you send Mom flowers at work for no reason sometimes, Daddy? That must mean you're thinking about her, too. Yes, dear. Your daddy still makes me tingle inside. That's how I feel when I'm with Julio,
Romy said simply.
I understand, Romy,
her mother said with sincerity.
I really do understand.
It's clear that you and Julio have something very special. Cornell said nothing. He wasn't quite ready to see his daughter grow up in front of him.
It happened really fast, Mom. I never planned to fall for any guy, let alone Julio.
That kind of stuff is never planned. That's why it's so wonderful.
You're not angry? Romy asked.
Angry? Why? Because you fell in love? Her mother smiled.
Because I didn't tell you about the gang stuff.
Cornell answered.
No, but I wish you had. We could have called the police and nipped this early.
I'm sorry, Daddy. I just didn't understand how dangerous it was. Me and Julio couldn't figure out why they wanted to hurt us. Did they catch the gang kids?
Yes, all five of them, her father told her. They have the car that was used to kidnap you, the guns, even Ben's videotape.
Oh, Romy, it could have been so much worse, her mother cried, realizing what almost happened. They could have killed you.
I know, Mom, Romy said sincerely.
I will always be thankful that this day turned out the way it did.
Where's Julio? I've got to see him.
He'll be here in a moment, her mother replied. First, I want you to meet his mother. Maria Montague had appeared at the door. She and I have become very close. Maria, this is my daughter, Romeette. Julio's mother smiled warmly and gave Romy a big hug.
Hello, Mrs. Montague, Romy said with no shyness at all. I've never met you, but I feel as if I know you.
And you too, my child. I am so glad that you and Julio are safe.
We have much to talk about.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Romy answered.
She liked Julio's mom right away. Maria left to return to Julio's room, and Mrs. Capel decided to go with her. They walked out, and immediately the door burst open again, and in strolled Destiny and Ben. Romy grinned with delight.
Hey, Romy! What it is, girlfriend?
Said Destiny, trying not to show her worry and relief. She tried to lighten the air a bit by sniffing the flowers and making a face at the ones that smelled bad.
Destiny! Romy exclaimed. What took you so long?
Hey, I've been chilling out in the woods all day. You know what I'm saying? Nothing else to do.
Romy grinned.
How do I look, Destiny?
Destiny got out a comb, then tossed it back into her purse and defeat.
Girlfriend, your hair is messed up.
Romy laughed.
It's the natural look.
Ben hadn't said a word yet. He was overwhelmed with the flowers. He simply stared at them in amazement.
Hey, Ben, Romy teased. Speaking of hair, your hair is looking a little faded this morning.
I may shave it all off and start over,
he said seriously.
What color is your hair, really?
Destiny asked him. Ben thought for a moment and shrugged.
I don't know. Been so long since I've seen it. Yep, maybe it's time for Ben to try the natural look, too.
Destiny got serious.
So what happened out there, Romy?
Julio saved my life, Romy said simply. He loves me, Destiny. He told me.
Awesome, Destiny replied. Adventure and love all in the same day. Truly awesome. Me and Ben have been looking for you all night long.
Just the two of you? Romy asked suspiciously.
Well, we spent most of the storm in my car, but the rest of the time we were looking for you. And guess what, Romy? We got the Fantastic Five.
All the times from 111 to 555? I don't believe it.
Yeah, Ben and me wished them all together. If I forgot, he reminded me.
Ben reminded you? You believe in our secret wish system, Ben?
Hey, it worked, didn't it? That's why I knew you would be safe. That and my advanced psychic abilities, Destiny added.
You were doubting those abilities a couple of hours ago, Destiny, Ben reminded her.
Never. You can't prove it. It's not like you have it on tape.
Destiny laughed.
Speaking of tape, how do they find the minicam? Romy asked.
It was in the trunk of Terrell's car,
Ben reported with excitement.
We even got to watch part of it this morning at the boathouse. They showed it on TV.
It's gonna help convict all of them, one of the cops told me.
Wow. So we helped after all, Romy mused.
I'm glad all what you went through was good for something,
Destiny said seriously.
Hey, Destiny, called Romy. Come over here close to the bed. I've got something to whisper in your ear.
Destiny leaned over close to Romy's face.
Yeah, Romy? What's up?
You remember you said your soulmate would come from London? Whispered Romy.
Yeah, so?
Destiny didn't follow where Romy was headed.
Maybe your dream meant London Woods. And wasn't he supposed to be big in music and colors? Isn't that a perfect description of Ben?
Destiny sat back on the bed with a thud.
Well, shut my mouth. I had my soulmate in front of me all the time, and it's Ben. I want my money back. I mean, your money back.
Relax, Destiny. I can tell Ben's crazy about you by the way he looks at you. Romy grinned as Destiny looked over at Ben with new eyes. She wasn't sure if she wanted Romy to be right or not. Ben looked at both girls like they were crazy. Romy's mother came back into the room, and Romy asked,
Mom, where's Julio?
Perfect timing, her mother replied. The nurses are bringing him in now. Here they come. Romy was suddenly quiet.
Hola, Julio,
she said softly.
Hola, Romy. Are you okay?
He looked worried. Romy tried to smooth her hair, but with no results.
Yeah, she said, seeing no one but Julio. I'm fine. Just fine.
Quit grinning so wide, Romy. Your face is gonna break, teased Destiny.
Ben looked at Julio and remarked,
Julio is just as bad. Let's get out of here, Destiny. They need a few minutes alone.
Okay, Ben, she agreed easily. I'm gonna let you take me out to dinner.
Bet, he grinned. I don't have to eat health food, do I?
No, teased Destiny. But you have to watch me eat it.
No problem. Let's go. And just to show you I believe in equal opportunity, Destiny, I'm gonna let you pay.
The modern gentleman.
Destiny bowed and with great exaggeration escorted him from the room as they both cracked up with laughter.
Later, Ben. Later, Destiny,
called Julio. Romy felt so much better, having her friends and family close by again. Cornell had gone to get coffee while the teenagers were in the room. As Ben and Destiny left, he walked back in. He glanced at Julio, smiled slightly, and nodded in his direction.
Daddy, Romy said, this is Julio.
Hello, son, Cornell said cordially. It's been quite a ride these last 2 days. Are you going to be okay now?
Yes, sir. I am fine. Miss Romy and I worry about. She was so cold, and I was afraid she'd never breathe again.
You did a fine job, Julio. You saved her life. I can never repay you for that. She is my flower.
Cornell looked at his daughter lovingly.
Yes, sir, Julio replied, readily agreeing with him. She is truly a flower, una flor hermosa.
Romy interjected.
Would you two quit talking about me like I'm dead or something?
Then she decided to cut through the delicate steps Julio would dance before he had nerve enough to ask Cornell for a job.
Daddy, Julio wants to work in the newsroom. He wants to learn how to use the cameras and produce a news show. Is there something he can do at the station after school or during summer vacation?
I'm sure we can find something. That intern job is still open, the one I offered you, Romy.
Yeah, but I hate that kind of stuff,
Romy said, pretending to gag.
Julio eats it for dinner.
I would love to have the opportunity, sir.
Say no more, son. How about 2 weeks from Monday after school?
Said Cornell, checking his pocket organizer.
Stop by and we'll show you the ropes.
You willing to put in long hours?
Oh, yes.
Julio's eyes were wide with anticipation.
And sweep the floor if it needs it?
Even before you ask, Julio promised.
Learn the cables and the cameras, Cornell continued.
As fast as you can teach me,
Julio replied.
You got the job.
Thank you, sir. You won't be sorry.
Julio grinned.
You're not planning to be a news anchor, are you?
Teased Cornell.
Not soon, sir. You got a couple of years before I'm ready for your job.
Julio teased boldly. Cornell grinned at Romy.
I like this kid, he said.
Me too, Daddy.
Romy said quietly. Chapter 61. The 6 o'clock evening news. It was 1 minute to airtime. The Montagues fidgeted nervously, smoothing their clothes and hair. Cornell was mic'd and ready, and Lawrence, the cameraman, sat grinning in the shadows in the back of the studio. The two families had decided that the best way to inform the community and to thank everyone who had helped was to go on the air live at the top of the evening news. Julio and Romeette rested comfortably, watching the news from their hospital beds. They continued to be amazed at all the attention that their disappearance had generated. From kids at school to total strangers, everyone wanted to reach out and share the joy of their rescue. A reporter from the Today Show had called, a film crew showed up, and Romy and Julio's interview was scheduled to air the next morning. The red light on top of Camera One blinked. It was time.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Cornell Capel. Standing next to me is my wife, Lady Brianna Capel, and on this side are Maria and Luis Montague, our friends. I would like to bring you up to date on the facts as we know them right now. First of all, I would like to thank everyone, the volunteers, the searchers, the organizers, the folks who brought the donuts, everyone, for their help in finding my daughter, Romeette, and the Montague son, Julio. Such a community outpouring has been so very much appreciated. We could not have gone through this ordeal without your support, and we cannot begin to convey our deepest thanks. From what we can gather, Romeette and Julio had been harassed at school by some young people who may or may not have been identified with a gang. They were stopped near London Woods, grabbed and placed in a car, then taken to the boathouse near London Woods Lake. From what we can tell, it was a means to frighten and intimidate our children, and it got out of hand. Romeette and Julio were then tied up, put in the bottom of a small boat, and set afloat on London Woods Lake. On an ordinary day, that might not have been life-threatening, but you are all aware of the storm last night, and there is the fact that my daughter cannot swim. Evidently, they were able to untie the ropes that held them, but they were adrift in the boat in a storm in the dark. Lightning finally struck the boat, and it was destroyed. They were forced to jump into those frigid waters, and Romeette almost drowned. Julio managed to drag her to safety, even after she had been overcome by the force of the water and the storm. When they reached the shore, Julio, carrying the unconscious Romeette, apparently tripped and fell over some storm-fallen trees. Close to unconscious himself, from the cold and exposure, he dragged her to safety in a hollow under some rocks and branches lodged under a huge fallen tree. The two of them huddled there the rest of the night, both of them drifting in and out of consciousness, Julio protecting Romeette with his body. That is how we found them, huddled together, barely conscious, but, praise the Lord, very much alive. They are both awake, alert, and hungry. Neither seems to have suffered any major injuries, although both will probably have headaches for a few days.
and Romeette had quite a bit of water in her lungs. Once again, let me thank our new friends, the Montagues, and our many other friends who helped in the rescue effort. It shows what a community can do when it cares about its young people. And although I love Shakespeare, I sure am glad that this story of the Montagues and the Capels did not end as Shakespeare's tale did. They cut to a commercial then, and Maria Montague let out a huge sigh of relief. They all laughed and headed to the rear of the studio. Cornell didn't have to finish the news that evening. He had been given the rest of the night off to get some much-needed rest. As they headed out to the parking lot, they passed Nanette carrying a huge box.
"Nanette, what in the world are you doing?" Cornell asked.
"I'm taking my stuffed animals home from the office. This is my third box," she replied cheerfully.
"Why?"
"Oh, didn't I tell you? I got a new job. No more ruining designer shoes for me. I'm moving to Indianapolis, where I'm going to have my own talk show on cable TV. I'm going to call it Nanette's News. Uncle Roscoe arranged it for me after he saw my interviews today. He said he'd never seen anything like that before."
"Well, that much I can agree with," Cornell chuckled. "I wish you the best, Nanette," he said sincerely.
She turned back and continued up the steps, whistling, and never noticed Cornell's dance of joy. Chapter 62. Phone Call. Soulmates. Romy curled up on the sofa in the living room with a bag of chips and a book. She and Julio had been back to school for about a month. Spring was fast approaching, and Destiny was already agonizing over which dress to wear to the prom in May. The phone ringing startled her for just a second, but she picked up the receiver on the first ring.
"Hi, Romy."
Julio's voice, which always made her smile, floated to her ear.
"Isn't normal wonderful?" he said.
"You got that right," Romy grinned. "To have to complain about school and homework and the taste of grape soda? How very ordinary and fine."
"He's hard to be famous," Julio mused. "The kids at school sure treat us differently."
"Yeah, I liked it better when I was just Romy, the girl with the new orange sweater. Not Romy, the girl who almost died in the lake."
"Don't sweat it. It will be over soon. And you'll be ordinary Romy once again. But you'll always be special to me."
"I guess everybody is supposed to get 15 minutes of fame," Romy said seriously. "I'm glad we got ours together." Both were silent for a moment.
"But I'm ready now to be ordinary, just to go to school together and play with Taco."
"I'm with you on that. Are we still going to the movies tonight, Romy?"
"For sure.
What shall we see?" "Nothing with gangs or near drownings, though, bet?" she teased.
"You got that right," agreed Julio.
Romy heard a thumping, crashing sound in the background.
"What was that?" she laughed.
"Taco,"
Julio chuckled.
"That silly puppy just ran through here, chasing a fly, I think. She knocked down a wastebasket and a chair."
Romy could almost see Julio smile through the phone.
"Such a silly puppy," Julio said quietly. "I really love her. And I really love you, even though you don't chase flies."
"I could learn if that's what turns you on," Romy laughed.
"No, I think I like you just the way you are, Romeette. No flies necessary."
"You know, Julio, it's hard to grab hold of all that happened to us. It really is like something from a movie.
And I can't help thinking how close it is to the Shakespeare story."
"Sort of," added Julio.
Romy laughed. "I don't think even Shakespeare could have imagined this one.
We really managed to live through one of our crazy fantasies, Julio.
You're right, he said seriously. It was scary for more than a moment, though, and it made me realize how much I care about you. I don't care what color you are, or what color your daddy is, or the color of your car or your dog. I just care about you and the person you are. I am so glad that we are both alive so that I can tell you that.
Romy was silent for a moment. Finally, she said quietly,
I feel so close to you, Julio. I don't know when your smile first became a part of mine.
And you say I talk fancy, he teased her.
But I know what you mean. Always remember, Romy, that nothing can ever destroy the part of you that is a part of me. You are the mate of my soul. Te amo, Romiet.
I love you, Julio.
Soulmates, he said quietly.
Forever.
The End. You've been listening to Romiet and Julio by Sharon M. Draper, narrated by C.C. Aisha Johnson. This work is copyrighted 1999 by Sharon M. Draper. This recording is copyrighted 2003 by Recorded Books. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.